Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Parent Choices for Struggling Teens with Lon Woodbury, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Parent Choices for Struggling Teens. I'm Lon Woodbury, located in North Idaho. Now, raising a child is a difficult job at best, but parents who have children with emotional, behavioral, and are learning problems find they need help, and often professional help. So here is where we talk with professionals or knowledgeable people who are devoting their lives to help those children and their families. The topic today is combating shame. And the guest is Mike Gurr. Hi, Mike. Glad to have you here.
Thanks, Lon. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Well, Mike is the clinical director at Sedona Sky Academy in Arizona. He's worked with struggling teens for 12 years and has been married for 19 years with five children. So he had a lot of experience with teens, and that's the main people we're talking about. But let's talk about shame and what is shame. And I was very impressed by something that you, in the material, you said that shame is a fear of being disconnected. So could you talk in general, what is shame?
Yeah, thanks, Lon. I appreciate it. In my work, this is a topic that people don't really like to talk about, so I appreciate you giving the time to it. You know, really, one thing about it is we all have it. Nobody wants to talk about it, and the less you talk about it, the more you have it. And so when you think of shame, shame is really the fear of being disconnected. And shame is going to drive two tapes when I've worked with people, and those two tapes are really, I'm not good enough, and who do you think you are? And so when I am thinking those things, shame does a great job of keeping me small. And it doesn't allow myself to be seen. It doesn't allow me to be authentic in who I really am. And it really puts up a wall between me and other people. So, you know, because I start thinking, you know, if people really knew me, then they would think I'm not, and then you fill in the blank. You know, I'm not smart enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not skinny enough. I'm not perfect enough. And probably one of the most dangerous tapes, Lon, that I've seen over the years is the idea that I'm not relevant enough. And that's probably one of the biggest triggers that I see with shame in people.
That would go along a lot with a low self-esteem, wouldn't it?
Sorry, say that again, Lon?
Oh, low self-esteem, because that's been a big thing the last several years, building up self-esteem. But it sounds like that would go along with low self-esteem. If you're shame-based, you're going to have low self-esteem also.
Absolutely. Shame, in our research, shame is very highly correlated with addiction, depression, suicide, bullying, aggression, violence, eating disorders. And so it is a huge piece when you talk about self-worth and self-esteem. I think it really hits the heart of people not feeling good enough, for sure.
Mm-hmm. I've always told my kids, I raised four kids, and I was telling them, don't compare yourself with each other, because shame is largely based upon comparison thinking, I think. But I would tell them, if you compare yourself with others, either you'll feel arrogant or you'll feel crappy. And
yep.
Yeah, you can't win if you compare yourself with others.
Yeah, what I found is a lot of times, Lon, when we compare ourselves with others, we compare our weaknesses to their strengths, and so it's going to be really hard, you know, to measure up, and that kind of goes back into, you know, that culture that a lot of times what our kids live in, and I think that culture really can be defined by this idea of scarcity, that it's just never enough. And, you know, how many times, I can't tell you how many times I've heard kids, when they get up in the morning, the first thing that comes out of their mind or comes into their mind is, I didn't get enough sleep. And the last thing that they think about when their head hits the pillow is, I didn't get enough done today. And everything in between that is scarcity. And so, you know, with what you said, Lon, that's where comparison comes into. That it is full force.
I think sounds like you're talking about Facebook, actually. Because that's what happens.
Oh, I love that you said that. Because, you know, where I'm at, as the clinical director, I get to see all of our applications that come in. And as I'm reading them, we have a question on there that asks, you know, what does your child do that's in excess? And honestly, over the past probably 2 or 3 years, Lon, 9 out of the 10 applications that I see report that their child is involved with technology excessively, like to excess. And so if you think about this idea of scarcity and shame and that this idea that we're not relevant enough, you know, how many people are and how many kids, you know, they're so concerned of how many likes do I have on Facebook, how many followers do I have on Twitter, and that's where they're trying to find that sense of belonging, and that sense of I am enough, and you know, I'm okay. And so I think you hit it right on. That's a big piece of the other part of scarcity is disengagement. You know, we could spend a lot of time on how I think technology, as great as it is, it does a wonderful job at disengaging us with people. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, what I was thinking of as a particular is that the situation is that I know my weaknesses are things where I don't feel up. And I go to Facebook, and they're happy, and they're having fun, and they're having more fun than I am, and they're doing things that I've never done, and oh, I'm miserable. I can see where the research shows that depression, the Facebook helps to cause depression. And I guess shame, because I'm not good enough. Well, let's talk about some ways in it.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about some ways about how, in addition to Facebook, our culture does foster shame.
Well, you know, I think just, again, going back to, you know, I'm going to, you know, that shame prone, if you think about how we communicate to each other and how kids are heard these days, a lot of things are used such as bullying, you know, personal attacks, tearing you down, getting louder, yelling. And I think you can just see that within our culture. I don't care if it's politics. You know, you got to love when you see all these ads just tearing each other down. And when you get enough of that, you want to disengage. You've had enough. And I've seen that with relationships in our own families. You know, when you've had enough of that, you just want to stop. You just want to disengage. And then, unfortunately, I can go online and I can kind of say what I want, do what I want, and hurt people, and there's not a lot of accountability there. And so, you know, the kids that we are seeing a lot now, Lon, there's definitely an increase with the idea of entitlement, the idea of it just doesn't really matter. You know, I don't really care, this idea of selfishness. And I think you see that in a society now where, you know, shame and blame really start going hand in hand. Is, you know, blame, I don't want to take a look at me. I don't want to take a look at my part. And I don't really want to be accountable. And, you know, I think you can see that in sports, politics, in our families. But it is definitely a culture thing that I see more and more of with the families that we work with.
And I presume not just teenagers, but adults, too, are playing the same game. Well, you know, shame and blame, just watch the political campaigns that are going on now in the advertisements and some of the debates. You'll see a lot of that.
Absolutely.
Well, now, Sedona Sky is an all-girls program, right?
That is correct.
Yeah. Now, do girls seem to be more susceptible to that, or is it manifest in different ways? Or talk a little bit about the differences between the sexes.
Well, I think, as I said before, we all have shame. Really, the only people who don't experience it, I like to say, are those that don't have the capacity for connection or empathy. And so you're going to find it in both genders, both guys and girls. I do think what's different, though, is the tapes that you will see with shame. I think there are some of those things that are gender specific. I think more when you look at girls, when they're comparing, you know, they're going to talk about being perfect enough, how they look, their talents, you know, their skinny, those types of things. Where with men, you know, our idea of shame is a little bit different. You know, if you think about more even as an adult man, you know, our role many times is to provide. And if I'm not able to do that, what are some of the shaming tapes that come into my mind? It doesn't really have to do anything with pretty or skinny or those types of things, but it does have to do with how good I am, you know, as a person. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't fail. You know, I'm afraid of failure, and I'm afraid to tell people I don't know something, because a lot of guys, we want to have the answers, we want to be able to fix things, and make things okay. And if we can't, that is one of those shame triggers for guys that happens quite a bit. So I think
Give me in here that's one something I thought I had before. The guys are supposed to provide, and particularly in the recession, I think a lot of guys have felt like, I can't support my family, or if the wife has more of a higher income, then there's shame on adult males, because they are supposed to take care of things and provide and support and all of that. So, and that's largely an attitude, expectations.
Right. And, okay. You know, and I think you hit it. And that's another, I think, piece of the culture, especially when I work with parents, is the level of expectations can definitely be shame producing or shame prone, because if I'm not meeting a certain expectation, what am I going to start telling myself? You know, I'm not, again, fill in the blank, and I can't tell you how many times I've had kids in my office, and the shame is truly coming from their parents. I don't think their parents mean it, honestly, all of the time. I think they want what's best for their kids, but when it's just full of this expectation and that expectation, you know, I was talking to a parent one time, and I said, you know, our job as parents is not to, you know, get our kids into the best preschools at 5, make a club team at 9, and get to yell at age 15. You know, our kids are actually designed to struggle, and they will struggle. And as parents, I think it's hard for us to see our parents struggle, because that actually creates shame in us. It reminds us when we were that age. And so if I haven't done that work as an adult, it's really hard for me to have empathy with my kid, and it becomes this vicious cycle, you know, within a family. And so, you know, many times those expectations I hear from the kids are really many times where those tapes start happening, you know, with kids at a very young age.
Oh, yeah. Well, in my mind's eye, I've heard this oftentimes, a parent saying to a kid when the kid's done something naughty or nasty or wrong or makes a mistake or what have you, you should be ashamed of yourself. And, well, I guess it's working.
Yeah, well, and like we were talking before we got on air, Lon, you know, shame really is this idea that I am bad, and guilt is I did something bad. And so as parents, you know, many times we will look at a behavior and say, that's who you are. And again, that just continues that shame cycle, you know, in a kid that, oh, man, I guess I am bad. And, you know, just ironically, I had a girl in my office this morning, and she's getting ready to go back on a home visit, and she says, Mike, I'm scared. I go, why? And she goes, so my entire life I've been labeled I'm a bad person because I've done bad things. And so she goes, I guess that's just who I am. And so when we keep using that as a way to communicate to our kids of what they have done, they start believing that, and that's who they become and who they are. Whereas guilt, which is interesting, as I was telling you, that's actually a good thing. You know, guilt actually, instead of focusing on the person, who they are, guilt is just on the behavior. And it's something, you know, and guilt actually is inversely correlated with everything we just talked about, addiction, depression, suicide, bullying, aggression. It's actually inversely correlated with all those things. So, you know, guilt kind of is one, I'm sorry I made a mistake, and shame is, I'm sorry I am a mistake. And those are two different things.
Yeah, I think guilt is just saying, well, that was just my behavior. I can do better. Or it opens the possibility I can do better. Whereas shame, no chance. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, a question I had here, and maybe we've covered it, but where does shame come from? What are some ways, and we've talked about some of them. Are there any more?
Well, I think one thing, if you think about fundamentally, one, you know, all people, a big need is love and belonging. And the absence of that, there's always going to be suffering. And so, I think belonging is a very innate human desire to be a part of something that's larger than us. And so, many times that is such a primal instinct we have. We'll try to acquire it by fitting in and seeking approval from other people. And so I think a lot of it actually, again, stems from this idea of I want to fit in, I want to belong. And we just talked about shame is that idea or the fear of not belonging and not connecting with others. And so I think you can go all the way back to that fundamental need of it. It's huge. We are truly hardwired to belong, to be needed and to be loved. And so I think that's really where I take a look at it, because most of the kids that we work with, and really some of the adults that we work with, their level of worth is in question. Their self-esteem is completely low. And I can kind of go back and take a look, and a lot of it begins right there. So I think that's another place to take a look at.
So that sounds like that's almost something universal, kids, adults, a need to belong. And if you don't belong, that's shame, there's something wrong with you. Is that sort of the way the formula works?
Yeah, exactly. And I think another component of that is the belief of if you knew me, if you really could see me, if these walls would come down and you really knew who I was, that's the fear of then you wouldn't like me, you wouldn't accept me, I wouldn't belong. And again, fitting in is really about that fear, because shame, it doesn't allow you to connect with other people. And so, people will say, I want to fit in, I want to belong, but yet the things they're doing per shame actually invites the very opposite in their life. And that's kind of this idea of insanity, is they're going to tell you, I don't like it, I don't like how I feel, I don't like what I'm doing, but yet in order to change, they're going to have to take a look at themselves and allow themselves to be seen and to really be vulnerable. And we can talk about that in a little bit of how vulnerability plays into shame. But, yeah, I think you hit it right on the head.
Okay, that reminds me of when I was admissions director for a therapeutic boarding school a number of years ago and had a gal come in, and I think it symbolizes this in a very concrete way. She had thick makeup plastered all over her face. And I told her that, well, one of the agreements was no makeup, and she burst into tears. And this was a sort of a first for me. And so in between the sobs, I started to ask her, well, what's wrong? She says, and everybody will see what I'm really like and how ugly I am. And, now I know part of the reason for the makeup, especially when you see a girl with extra heavy makeup, is they're ashamed of themselves.
Yep. Yeah, there's definitely some shame thoughts going on behind that. I would agree with you.
Oh, yeah. And the poor girl, she was just distressed. She was over the concept. And actually, I would hate to get close to her because some of that makeup might rub off onto me. It was so thick. it was really something. It was she was a pretty attractive girl, but not with all that makeup on that.
Right.
And we could go a long ways with some of this and some of the figures, national figures we've had that, and the makeup that they use on that. In general, how do we combat shame? What's some of the elements in combating shame? Now, we've sort of talked and got an idea of what it is.
Right. Well, I think the idea, Lon, is this idea of shame resilience. The goal to the work in shame is not to say you're never going to have it. Obviously, the goal is we know it's going to be a part of you because we're in relationship to people. So I like the idea of saying that we want to create shame resilience in people's lives. And the thing, I guess an idea that I think about when I think of shame resilience is that I'm able to move through shame. I can maintain who I am, my authentic self, and as I move through that process, I can actually come out on the other side of it with more courage, more compassion, and even more connection than I even had before the event that might create shame. And so, to me, it's not the idea of I'm never going to experience it. but it's what do I do when I experience it? And that's really, I think, this body of work that we try to do with both our adults and the teens that we work with, is we want them to be resilient to that. We don't want it to take them in a downward spiral and take them to a place where they don't care anymore. I have just found over time when people don't care about themselves, about others, that's when they get into very, very unhealthy relationships, unhealthy behavior. So I would say that's kind of the pinnacle when we talk about shame, shame resilience.
Okay, so what would some of the specific actions you might take, say a kid comes into your office or gets enrolled in your school and it's a lot of shame-based. So what would be some of the things you would say, she's got to change her thinking, or anybody, would have to change their thinking. So what would you do, or what would you advise her? And part of it would be providing supports. But what else? Well,
yeah,
examples. Maybe some examples would fit in here of what you've done with specific kids.
Well, I think one thing, Lon, that we try to teach them is it's okay to be vulnerable. Many kids who have shame, who are full of shame, they don't want to be seen. I mean, they literally put themselves behind walls, and those walls can be silence, it can be aggression, it can be addiction. But they work really, really hard in portraying an image that I don't want you to see me, or I want you to see me a certain way. And a lot of what I've seen our kids do, Lon, is they like to numb. Because of the shame that they have, and whether that's because of things they've been told or events that have happened to them, they will try to numb. And what I have found is that we want to numb the bad, but when we numb the bad, we also numb the good. We can't selectively numb. And so that's a big piece, for these girls that we work with is really this idea of being vulnerable, really showing up and being seen. And a lot of that work is they need to find out who they are. And so that's a part of being vulnerable is, there's a lot of myths out there with vulnerability, and it's weak. I'm going to get hurt. But really, if you think about, being vulnerable, that's really the birthplace of creativity, of love, of belonging, of connection, which, again, we're really wanting them to feel again, of joy, and really accountability. And so that, to me, is probably one of the biggest things that I work with the girls is the first thing is really letting go of what other people think and being okay to be vulnerable. And so, we'll definitely have group work, we'll have workshops that really give them the experience and the opportunity to see that it's okay. It's okay to put myself out there. It's okay to be vulnerable and to really kind of dispel some of those myths of what we attach, to vulnerability. So that I would say that's probably the first thing, because if you think about just, again, taking this to a broader scale, just how much we as a society numb, we are, as research shows, we are the most addicted, overweight, in debt, and obese cohort in American society right now. That comes from Dr. Brené Brown. She's doing a lot of research over these last 12 years from the University of Houston. And a lot of that is numb. That's how we numb. Let's say that a woman goes to the doctor she has a mammogram. She's afraid of that. And, what comes up for a woman while she waits for that callback from the doctor, there can be some pretty big emotions. And if I don't want to feel that, what might I do to numb? I might go shopping. I might drink. I might eat. And so we do a great job of numbing those things and just not being vulnerable. And so, if I can help these kids and these adults to understand really, I can't selectively numb, and it's okay to be vulnerable. That's when they'll start seeing that there can be a connection, and I can actually feel the opposite. I can feel that joy. I can feel that sense of belonging. So that's probably the first thing, as you ask, that I want them to let go of what people think, of fear of being judged, and really allowing themselves to show up and be seen.
You know, let me follow through a little bit more on, you know, on where it comes from. It sounds like our culture is probably more susceptible to shame than other cultures, and if so, is it because we're more achievement oriented, or the helicopter parents that are trying to get the kids to get into the top school starting at the age of five? Or so you speculate a little bit on that.
I think, you know, I think if you look at any culture right now, you know, I think ours definitely is defined by this idea of scarcity, which we talked about before. And you can see that, you know, in families, you can see that in corporations. You know, how many of us work in a place where the idea is you need to produce more with less? And, you know, that to me just feeds in to this idea that you just, it's just not enough. You know, whatever you do is not enough. And, you know, 67% of people leave their place of employment because they don't feel appreciated. You know, they don't feel like they're relevant enough, that their contributions are enough. So I think you can look at that, you know, Lon, whether that's in the corporate world or even in a family, like you said. You've got helicopter parents coming in, and basically through their actions, they're telling their kid they're not enough. You can't do it without me. I need to rescue you. Or if I have an authoritarian parent, completely different style of parenting, but it's the same message. You know, I'm going to tell you what to do because you don't know how to do it without me. So I think you can see this pervade throughout all different aspects of our society that really creates this idea of scarcity and is very shame prone, for sure.
Let's talk a little bit about this vulnerability you mentioned. Isn't that similar to humility?
I think in order to be vulnerable, there is definitely a humbling component to allowing myself to do that. I think sometimes one thing that creates disconnection with people is our pride. We won't allow ourselves to say sorry. We won't allow ourselves to be accountable. Again, we're focused on blame. We're focused on everybody else's problems. And it's really easy, I think, Juan, to see what people are doing to us. But it's a little bit harder for us to see what we're doing to other people. And I think that's where pride comes into play. Mm-hmm. And I think the antithesis of pride is humility. And I think that's a huge component of when I really want to connect with somebody. In my own experiences, you know, when I can humble myself and I can be, you know, I can be willing to be taught, I can be open, I can be accountable, I'm going to have much more of a connection with somebody, you know, when I'm in a humble spot than, you know, being full of pride.
I find it intriguing that that a lot of people, and they do, I agree, see as being vulnerable is showing a weakness, and that's, you know, the ego's involved in there. But I'm thinking some of the most accomplished famous people in the world, you know, Martin Luther King Jr., Thoreau of Walden, Gandhi in India, Jesus for that matter, is in the Christian church, had a tremendous and were very influence tremendous influence and were very powerful people, and that was vulnerable. They were very vulnerable. They were and had a humility that did it. So it's sort of a false thought that, well, if I'm vulnerable, I'm going to show a weakness. I got to tough up, man up. I think men, especially boys, especially are
subject to this. Lon, you hit one of the biggest shame triggers right there. I've got to man up. That is probably one of the biggest shame triggers I see in men. You hit it perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's something men are working with. Now, I know the feeling. I was a little scrawny when I was a kid, and that was sort of tough.
Well, you know, and you think about how we parent even little kids differently. I know I've got three boys and two girls, and you know, if my boys were to trip and get hurt or skin a knee, you know, what do we say to them?
Okay.
Hey, shake it off. You're
shake
okay.
It off. Go on.
You know, move on. If our little girls do that, what do we do?
Oh, a lot of empathy and sympathy.
Oh, it's okay. You give them hugs. Mm-hmm. And so I think sometimes even at an early age, we start teaching, you know, what's okay, what's not okay, you know, for little girls. Yeah, let's be vulnerable. For little boys, no. You hit it right on. Let's man up, you know, shake it off, walk it off. That was perfect that you said that.
Yeah. Well, and another thing I've also noticed that girls, it's an advantage to be tiny. They want to be tiny. Boys, if you're tiny, you got a problem. You're supposed to, man, you know, beef up. And so it's such a mirror image of each other. It's just sort of amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll need we're about half past, and we need to take a 1 minute break for an important announcement. This is Lon Woodbury with Parent Choices for Struggling Teen, talking with Mike Gurr. He's the clinical director of Sedona Sky Academy, and we're talking about combating shame. Raising children is a tough job. The job is even harder due to all the distractions, temptations, and dangers facing teens and their parents in our modern age. Some of these children are especially challenging and make such poor decisions as teens that their parents fear for their child's safety and future. I'm Lon Woodbury, and as an independent educational consultant, in my 22 years of practice as Woodbury Reports, we have worked to help hundreds of parents individually throughout the country who fear for their child's future. We also have an extensive website, strugglingteens.com, that provides as much objective information as we can to help parents. And we produce an LA talk radio show interviewing leading professionals who are helping parents right after Answers for the Family. If you have a child whose decisions make their future in doubt and you are looking for help, you can call me at 208-267-5550 and I'll be glad to try to help you. Or check my website, strugglingteens, that's one word, .com. Well, welcome back. This is Lon Woodbury with Parent Choices for Struggling Teens. And I'm talking to Mike Gurr. He's the clinical director of Sedona Sky Academy. And we've been talking about combating shame. And so let's talk a little bit more about what you do and what's specific in what you do there at Sedona Sky that's specific to combating shame. What are some of the things you do and how is it combating shame?
So I would say, Lon, that again, it goes back to the workshops. We have what we call a three-day intensive workshop for the girls and also for the parents, but then we follow it up with group work. We follow that up with homework with both the parents and the kids. I think the neat thing is both the girls and their parents are doing the same work. I cannot tell you how important that is when you take a look at a family systems. That everybody is doing their part. And so some of the things that we really focus on in the workshop, but also in those groups, the one I hit on already, you know, we talked about letting go of what people think and really, you know, looking at it, it's okay to be vulnerable. The other one that we look at is letting go of perfectionism. You know, we talked about the comparison piece, but this idea of I have to be perfect, I think pervades both adults and teens. And when I am thinking about being perfect, I'm not going to measure up. And it's always about what other people are thinking about me. It's not about me just doing the best that I can. But I'm always striving to meet somebody else's expectations. And as you probably know, and I've experienced myself, rarely does that happen. And so we're going to keep falling short. And so one thing that we like to try to cultivate and teach the girls and the parents here, instead of looking and being able to let go of perfectionism, is really cultivating this idea of self-compassion and being okay with falling short sometimes. And, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with that, the quote by Roosevelt in 1910. I have to probably paraphrase a little bit, but that's probably one of the neatest quotes that we use, you know, for our girls here, that talks about them, you know, getting into the arena, and really allowing yourself to be seen, and it's okay just to, you know, to do your best, and not have to be, you know, perfect. And so that's something. And if I can, we have time, I'll try to find that quote or kind of share that quote with you, because it's a very powerful, you know, quote that we use, I think, that talks a lot about, you know, what we're trying to do specifically with, you know, with that. And really, it's just kind of this. I'll just kind of throw it off the top of my head. It kind of says this: it's not the critic who counts. It's not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of the deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, and who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his or her place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat. And that's what we want our girls to do, Lon, and our parents, honestly, is to go into the arena. And you know what? When you go into it, you're going to get your butt kicked. You know, you're going to have people that say you're
if
not
you,
good enough.
You know? If you did that by memory, I'm impressed. I remember hearing that.
I actually say that to my kids almost every night.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, okay, well, one of the things, could you share a little bit of what goes on through your thought process when you're trying to do this combating shame with the girls? Because from the way you described it, you know, here's what we try to get across to them. But a lot of parents says, well, I've told her to let go many, many times and she won't do it. So what more do you do than just lecture?
I think the thing that...
The lecture doesn't work.
Yeah, no, lecturing, I think number one, I'll tell parents, I'm going to ask them, what's your relationship like with your kids? How-tos, I don't think work. If how-tos worked, we wouldn't be in a lot of the situations we are. There's plenty of books out there that tell you 10 things to do, 5 things to do. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of parents I've worked with around the world that have a lot of knowledge. They've read a lot of books, but yet it's still not working. And if I take a look at their relationship, typically something is going wrong. There's something amiss in the relationship. And so, you know, that's a lot of the things that I'll tell parents they need to work on first and foremost is, do you even have a relationship with your son or with your daughter? And honestly, most of them, because of they're busy, they're doing things, they have other priorities, their relationship is not where it needs to be. And because of that, their level of influence is actually very low. And to me, as a parent, I can't control, I can't make, I can't force. We would like to. I know I have done, I've wished that a lot of times, but the best thing I've got, Lon, with my kids and with the girls I work with is influence. And my goal is, how do I increase that level of influence? And to me, the number one thing is I need to look at the relationship that I have with that person.
Have you read Ron Taffel? Are you familiar with him, an educator?
I am not.
Some very popular books. I had him as a guest a while back, and he was talking, I think it was back in the 90s, The Second Family. And it makes exactly the point about families is that the kids want to have a relationship with their parents, but the parents are busy, the parents are superfluous, and when together and maybe watching TV. And so they sort of given up, and they go to their peers because they don't expect any relationship from their family. It's a very interesting concept that he developed and became pretty popular. And I think it's along the line of what you're talking about. Can you do some examples like this gal you were talking about this morning? You said you're talking about and afraid of her visit. What were your thoughts? What's your thinking of what she needs and what you needed to do? What do you do on situations like that in order to try to get this goal that you've mentioned, letting go?
Or am I asking for
trade secrets?
No. There's just a lot to that, to be quite honest with you. But I can just kind of tell you my interaction I had with her this morning is, again, just to kind of give you a picture, this is a kid who comes from a pretty affluent background, so she's used to getting what she wants. She surrounded herself with friends that are high achievers, but at the same time, they're all trying to find their self-esteem through things outside of them. She doesn't measure up. She thinks she has to have the perfect body. She has to, you know, do this perfect, do that perfect.
And she probably picked that up from her parents.
Absolutely, and from her friends. And so what she has turned to numb that is drugs and sex. And so I asked her, I go, what's the function behind that? And she goes, so I don't have to feel. She goes, that's the only time that my mind isn't racing, that I'm worried constantly about what people are thinking. You know, can I measure up? Can I do this? And she goes, I can finally just not think about that. I can numb it. And I told her, I said, well, unfortunately, you know, we can't selectively numb. And so I said, instead of you being powerless and you allowing other people to control and dictate what you think or feel, I go, let's talk about what's going to happen when you go home. Because her biggest thing, one, she was afraid of when she goes home is she's going to relapse. She's going to be around those friends again, and they're going to say, you know, hey, you know, here's a line, or hey, here's some Oxycontin, or whatever, you know, her DOC is. But she goes, I'm really afraid that I'm just going to fall right back into that. And she goes, I'm very impulsive. And I told her, I said, okay, just a second. I go,
sounds like she's a fairly new kid there, and this was her first visit.
This will be one of her, going home. Yep, this will be her first time going back home. And I just told her, I said, I want to empower you. You know, I want you to know that you have a choice. And so we kind of walked through the different scenarios, because a lot of kids think that, you know, they don't have a choice, especially when they want to go back to these numbing, ways that they did things. And I said, listen, I go, let's talk about it. So I just kind of walked her through some scenarios, and I asked her, I said, what could you do different? And she actually came up with 5 things that she could actually do different that she didn't even think about before, because she was just like, nope, this is how it's going to be. This is how it always is. And I told her, I said, be careful of using absolutes. You know, if you really think in those terms of always and never, I go, you're not giving yourself much of a chance. So I used one of the guideposts of letting go of perfectionism, and saying, you know, really saying, you know, you can do it. And the biggest thing I think with what we do want is we want them to go home and really to experience something different. You know, we've given them a lot of tools. We've given them a lot of self-awareness. We've allowed them to be vulnerable. They've experienced that it's okay to be them, you know, to be seen and to show up. And so our hope is she's going to go home this weekend, and she's going to make some different choices. And it's weird because, again, it goes back to that shame cycle that I'm so used to that dance. I'm so used to, and she even told me this, Mike, I'm so used to messing up. That's just who I am. And a big part of what we do with these girls is to help them see them more than they really are.
And, is shame sort of almost a universal element in all the students that arrive at Sedona Sky for treatment or help?
Honestly, Lon, I would say probably 99.9% of them are coming here with that.
Yeah, I could believe that. What are the elements of shame resilience? You mentioned that earlier, and you sort of talked about it, but let's try to focus in. Shame resilience sounds like that's the solution. If you get them to have some resilience, they can feel the shame, you know, whatever shame, warming of the cheeks or what have you, whatever the signs are, and how do you make them resilient?
So there's kind of 4 elements, you know, and I'll go on to some more guideposts if we have some time as far as what we do with that. But when you look at actually shame resilience, there's 4 elements that we really like to help these girls and, again, the parents get to. And really one is that they know what it is and really what triggered it. Because so many times this has been such a pattern, just as I shared with you with that girl, you know, they're not even aware of what it is, what triggers it. And so that's a big piece of resilience is knowing it and what's happening, what actually triggers it.
Is that sort of a mindfulness exercise?
Absolutely. I mean, that's a big part of, what I like to say is actually being able to go into their stories, talking their stories, and on owning their story, and not justifying, not blaming. And I think that's another part of shame resilience is, you know, everybody that comes here, everybody that we meet, Lon, obviously has a story. And I think an important piece to shame resilience is owning it, you know, really owning it, because shame doesn't want you to. Shame wants you to be powerless. Shame wants you to think
blame somebody else,
you
or
do about it.
Is that blame somebody else?
Absolutely.
Or
justify, blame,
ignore.
As long as you're doing the blame and justifying, guess what? You're not doing. You're not doing any work on you, and shame loves that because then it will just stick with you. So, the other part is that we really want them to practice that critical awareness about expectations and messages that really send shame to them. And so the one thing that we do, with that quote that I just shared with you is this idea of what are the arenas that you face every single day. What tends to happen, Lon, is when these girls or adults go into any arena, here comes the shame. Here comes the comparison. Here comes the scarcity. And we try to help them be very critically aware of what are the arenas. And sometimes the arena is just having a phone call with mom or dad. Sometimes the arena is writing the accountability letter. I'll be honest with you, Lon, this is the arena that I'm in with you. Before I called you and I knew I was coming on air, this is the arena. And I had some thoughts like, well, who are you to be talking to Lon? And you know, what do you know? And so in any of these arenas, we want the kids to really understand what are the messages that come to you as you enter the arena. And really the last one is speaking it. Don't hide from it. And that's where the vulnerability piece comes in. So when I can combine those four elements of shame resilience, you're going to have a kid that's going to really be able to work through shame while they maintain who they are. But the cool thing is they come out on the other side of it really with more compassion and really feeling more connected to the people around them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're talking about shame resilience and some of the things. Do you want to spend about a minute to 2 minutes to wrap up? And then I want to give you a couple, 3 minutes to talk about Sedona's Guy, and that's your commercial break times. But sort of wrap up what you're seeing at this whole thing, and then talk about Sedona's Guy Academy.
Okay. Just let me, I guess, finish with some of those guideposts, Lon, as far as the other kind of tools, I guess, with what we do with combating shame. Again, we want to let go of that scarcity idea and really have these girls cultivate gratitude. I could speak a whole session, a whole thing on gratitude, but that's a huge piece of what we do here. Again, we want them to really let go of the anxiety, you know, that comes along with shame, and teach them it's okay just to be still, to be with themselves, to be comfortable with themselves, and again, letting go of having to be cool. You know, a lot of our kids come in with the image of, you know, I have to be, you know, this bad, cool, and you know what, it's okay just to laugh, to be yourself, to be silly, and we actually give them opportunities to get out of that comfort zone. You know, and the other one, too, is letting go of this self-doubt, that I'm not good enough, and really cultivate this idea that they have talents. You know, cultivate meaningful work, doing hard things. You know, we've seen in research has showed that, you know, a big piece of self-esteem comes from doing things that are hard and accomplishing them and that are meaningful. And so those are just some of the guideposts that we really try to help cultivate, you know, as part of the girls' stay here at Sedona Sky when we talk about shame resilience and really getting rid of some of those, you know, those things that get in the way of belonging, connection, you know, and really having that joy. So,
well, you have about 1.5 minutes left, so let's talk about Sedona Sky. Okay. This is your commercial break time. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Talk about Sedona Sky. You have about a minute left
now. So Sedona Sky. All right. So we are a all girls residential treatment center. We serve girls 13 to 18 years old, and we serve girls from families from all around the world. We have a big. We're here in Rimrock, Arizona. We sit on 35 beautiful acres, and we do a lot of work. The kids are here for about 10 to 12 months on average, and it's very family oriented. We do a lot of family work with them. We think it's hugely important for both the families and the girls to do the same work. Our goal is that they do the work here, but the most important thing is it translates obviously back home when they get there. This is, I like to say this, Lon, we're the practice field, and home is game time. And so we spend a lot of time, you know, with the girls. It's very intense, the therapeutic program, very structured. And again, we want to teach the girls, you know, who they are.
And how would somebody? And how would somebody, if they were interested, how would somebody contact you? We're right up against about time.
Yeah.
We have to
our phone number. Our phone number is 928-567-1322, or you can go to our website at www.sedonasky.org, and you could contact our admissions, and they would answer any questions you may have.
Okay, well, very good. Good timing, which we reached the end of the time. Thank you very much, Mike. This has been very enlightening. And this is Lon Woodbury with Parent Choices for Struggling Teens, and we've been talking to Mike Gurr, the Clinical Director of Sedona Sky Academy. Thank you very much, Mike.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're listening to Parent Choices for Struggling Teens with Lon Woodbury, right here on LA Talk Radio.